Andy, how's it going, man?
Good. A bit tired. We were saying this before we hit record, where you kind of got to wake up and see the action. For me, I had to stay up kind of late to follow along with the election. And even then, when I went to bed, like, it was still very uncertain what was going on. And I mean, even now, it's still not necessarily clear, but I do feel like we have a clearer picture of things going in Biden's way. But it was definitely a wild kind of probably like 10, 12 hour stretch of uncertainty there.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, when we got up this morning, so we're obviously talking on the day after election, Wednesday, the 4th. And yeah, when we got up this morning, so I live in France, so we're 6 hours ahead of the East Coast. Wisconsin and Michigan were both very much red or like pink, whatever you look at it on the CNN map, like definitely trending like solid, like 5 to 10 percentage points. And like since I got up until like early afternoon, it's shifted to, you know, this blue wave that they're talking about. So it's super interesting. I went to bed last night with no information, woke up this morning with really bad information. Now, you know, in the afternoon, it looks a little better. So, I mean, even just throughout the day, it's been like a freaking roller coaster. So such as 2020, I think, huh?
Yeah. Do you mind if I like rant for a little bit?
No, go for it. Yeah.
So what is like the most frustrating parts for me about politics, specifically like when it comes to like presidential elections, is just the general lack of understanding of like how probabilities work. And it's always frustrating, like when people point to Nate Silver being so wrong in 2016, it's like, no, I think he had Trump winning at like a 20 to 30% likelihood. And in a lot of people's eyes, that's wrong because he won. And that's a binary outcome of like 100% he won. People don't understand, like they can't think probabilistically in the sense of like going into it, practically nothing is going to be binary like that. It's going to be this always happens or this never happens. And there's always going to be some distribution of outcomes. And it's just really lost on the general public. And I mean, last night was a really great example of this, where I'm typically a believer that markets are generally trending towards being efficient. I think there are moments of inefficiency, but I think to beat markets on the whole, especially the more liquid they are, the more active they are, is just very, very, very difficult to say the least. But there are, especially in sports betting markets, which are obviously orders of magnitude smaller than the stock market or bond market or things like that, you can have weird events where it just, the markets get way out of line and against all reason and against all rationality. And like last night was the definition of one of those where, again, like I don't view Nate Silver as like a Nostradamus, but I think he is probably not probably. I think he is, at least for publicly publishing this stuff, like he is the most accurate and most thoughtful source on probabilities for national elections. Just his methodology, nothing comes close to it. And like he is kind of, in my opinion, the litmus test. And he was saying going into the election that it was going to be something like 91% probability that Biden wins. And the markets, though, had like an implied probability, the betting markets, of about 67%. And like that to me just seemed like a pretty massive difference where, sure, maybe Nate Silver's wrong, but like I don't think he's going to be that far off. And so I placed some bets on that at those odds. And then I was talking to you about this before, but it was like he broke down how all the states were going to report, what they were reporting, what they had counted, when they'd start counting mail-in ballots, what that would mean for how early results would be skewed, and had broken it down state by state. And basically said, like, I don't expect to really know anything by the end of the night. And so it's like, okay, that's kind of my mindset that I'm going into it with this. But then, and it seemed like other people on like, just like in the little mini world of Twitter, it seemed like at least people I were following, like that was kind of the general wisdom. It was like, yeah, don't go into this expecting too much. But then as soon as those first reports started coming out, that just like all went out the window. Everyone just started reading into the early results, not looking into anything. And there were guys that are well-respected sports bettors that had hundreds of thousands of dollars at least on the election, and were saying, wait, what's the deal with mail-in ballots in Pennsylvania? Like, how does this actually work? And you were just seeing the betting markets shift wildly in favor of Trump. And all the while, Nate Silver's just kind of going, yeah, there are some things that are unexpected in like a binary sense, but no state has flipped against Biden. The only thing that's really changed against the predictions is that Arizona is for Biden. Sure, there are some margins that are bigger than we had anticipated, but like nothing crazy is happening. And yet Biden went from being like a 67% favorite to like a 15 to 20% underdog, where those are his likelihoods of winning. And I bet again, much bigger when he kind of first became an underdog. But then you're like, and this week we could talk about kind of navigating uncertainty in general in a little bit, but it's like, I'm sitting there telling myself like double, like triple checking what Nate Silver is saying, but like looking over at what states have reported. I'm looking at the breakdown of like when they count and what ballots get counted when, all of that. And it's like, yeah, like this seems like rationally, like this is inconsequential to Biden's results, at least not like this massive of a shift. But then the markets are just going nuts around you. It's like every time I would bet, the odds would get even better. Like it would make Biden an even better, a bigger underdog. And like typically when the markets move against you like that, you don't want to like double down because they're usually telling you something. And so it took a lot of, I mean, some just kind of gamble, but it took a lot of conviction just to be like, yeah, like I'm going to plant my flag. It's like, no, the markets are wrong here, and just keep adding to my position. And that was kind of where I went to bed. And just be like, yeah, we'll see what happens. We'll see. And I woke up and I checked, and yeah, Biden's now back to like an 80% favorite. And I think this is where it's like, in the short term, you can have huge market fluctuations that are just pure noise. It's hysteria. It's people just kind of groupthink. And then over time, when calmer minds prevail, it'll settle out. I don't even know if this has like truly settled out or maybe corrected too far in the other direction, but it's just like, yeah, it was just a wild period of just like purely irrational hysteria where I'm trying to like profit from it, but at the same time, I'm like, maybe they have something, maybe they're right. I don't know. So it was an interesting night.
Yeah. I mean, there's two terms that come to mind as you're saying that. And one is like information asymmetry. I think it's a really fancy term for like, you know, something that everyone else doesn't know. Right. And that's usually not the case when it comes to bookies, right? And people making the odds, they tend to be the people that know the most. And so I think what you're saying is like, when that happens, when you know something that other people don't, and I think we can bring this into like entrepreneurship, is like, we know something that our competitors don't because we're small and nimble and things like that. Maybe some of that, I want to dig into that more, but I think the other one is very much like an amateur gambler or an amateur stock market picker / quote investor, where their emotions get the better of them and they make emotional decisions, usually when the tides turn against them and they, you know, sell at the bottom or whatever. And I think that those two things are what separate, for me, like people who really understand and manage risk well and uncertainty and people that don't. And I think you can say that's investing in a market like the stock market or sports gambling or entrepreneurship, and like the bets that we take in our business of like hiring somebody or going into this market or taking the product in a certain direction. Does that kind of jive with you that like those things are kind of consistent across the parts of your life?
Yeah, for sure. And I think to me, it's like the difference between investing or I guess just even taking like informed risks. It comes down to like having some idea of like a fundamental value or fundamental price of like where things should be, at least when it comes to like literally like gambling, that kind of things. It's like, you see so many times in investing with stocks where it's just pure speculation or real estate, especially where people say, oh, the market's booming. the trends, like people are really going after this. Like I'm trying to think of like examples, like sure, like e-commerce, like, oh yeah, with COVID, like e-commerce is only going up. So we got to get in at this. But it's like, that's like people saying, the sports betting equivalent of that is saying like, yeah, like road teams have been hitting, like road games in cold stadiums have typically been hitting the under for the last like 10 weeks. So we should bet the under next time that like these conditions come up. And it's like, well, the market might have priced that in. And unless you can like figure out what the fair price is of a game, of a stock, of whatever else, you can't really have any conviction of when like the market's out of line or when the maybe there was an edge on that kind of like narrative, but you don't know when it's going to be priced in and there's no edge left there. And it's like, sure, like, yeah, real estate is going up and up and up, but everyone knows that. And so like people are building like crazy. So there's going to be a point where like supply outstrips the demand. And how do you know, unless you can inherently value what the value is today, like when we're there, when we're going to get there. And like, that's why with this case, with the election, for me, it almost made it harder because we had like firm numbers from Nate Silver, which like gave a price. It said like, this is what the fair price is now. And then the market was giving a price that was just like way off. And it's like, it's one thing if I had like a Excel spreadsheet and I kind of like hacked together a few things to like come up with like a basic price myself, then I'd be like, I feel okay with this, but not great. But like with this one, it's just like, this is like a very strong model that we're relying on. And it was almost weird how far out of whack it was from the market, but it's just like, no, like all the boxes check out. But I think what
happened, it's not just the data because, sorry. It's not, I think it's not just the data because everybody can go to 538 and see that, right? It's the, how people analyze and interpret that kind of raw data in the scenario that they're in, right? Like that, I think that's what happened.
I think that's almost giving too much credit to people where this felt like free money where like truly today I could hedge out the other side of my bet and guarantee a profit. I'm not going to because I like some risk, but and I don't want to like pay a fee to remove risk. But there wasn't analysis needed to figure out what like the expected win percent was. Like Nate Silver was giving it to people. People were ignoring that and finding like biases, finding like emotional driven reasons to discredit it. And so they were saying, oh, like he was wrong in 2016. He's wrong now. Red waves coming over. Trump's winning. It's all those silent voters that vote at the poll, but don't answer the survey calls. Oh, the pollsters don't know what they're doing. And then it just like, it's a kind of feedback loop where one thing is that the betting markets for this are not representative of the population at large. It's going to be like 90% male, and they're the ones driving this action. And so that's going to skew it naturally. These are people who are placing bets on a gambling site. So they're not going to be like sophisticated investors on the whole. And so the definition of like a very skewed like retail investor market where hype can just drive, you see in crypto, you see it in all these things where like one narrative, one story can just drive a single asset wildly up or down. And I think that's what was happening is that if people were on Twitter, it seemed clear that like Trump had won if you were just like following the group thing. And then the media is picking up on that and it just kind of becomes a narrative. And then people see the lines, the odds changing, and they're trying to get in on it. And it's like, I don't think there was analysis is what I'm basically getting at, is I think people let their emotions get the best of them and kind of their own biases come out and just find ways to discredit the analysis. And then it's felt like a train that was running away. So people wanted to get on board. And there were just like a lot of like psychological factors, I think, drove it. But yeah, I don't think it was as though like, there is competing analysis against like that, the kind of prevailing wisdom, at least in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I think it's interesting and like try to try to kind of bring it to business and like this journey that we're on. Like, as you look at kind of looking at risk in general, I think one of the things I wanted to kind of ask you about is like, what things do you feel like you kind of bring over from like the professional gambler part of your life into entrepreneurship and running a business that I could learn from and the people listening can like learn from, especially when it comes to like objectively understanding risk and what it means, you know? Cause I think like that's what you saw yesterday and like this morning, I guess, with like the election, but like, I don't know, frameworks and kind of more specific things about like when you look at a scenario, talking about probabilities and like the likelihood that a thing is going to happen. Like, I don't know. Can you just kind of talk through? I'm trying to give you specifics. I know you wanted specifics.
No, I get what you're saying. And I think the farther away it gets from gambling, the less quantified I am on it, just because like when there are actual numbers and you're like, to me, I view a lot of this as like a math problem. A pretty complex one, but like we can build algorithms, we can build other things to analyze these problems. And that's been our approach to, that was my approach to poker. And that's been our approach to sports betting and daily fantasy sports. And a lot of that comes from my like insecurities of being wrong, where I don't like, I'm never going to just like go out on a whim on something. Like I'm not going to just naturally kind of take guesses. Like I want to get as close to an answer as I can. And I think when it comes to business, it's why I think it's just super important to really understand at a fundamental level, like what you're doing with everything that you do. And just by that, what I mean is like, instead of just going through the motions of, I know I've kind of gone on some rants about like marketing, just not almost never being effective. And that's that thing, but it's like, and instead of just like going through the motions with marketing and being like, oh, we should be writing blog content, we should be doing this, we should be doing that, and then doing it, and then kind of just like not really knowing if it's paying off, without trying to figure out why are we doing this, how will we know if it's successful, I feel like you really are gambling and just not even thinking about the risk and just the potential outcomes and all of that. And so to me, I don't even know if it's like managing uncertainty in the business. For me, I think it's just being very clear, or as clear as I can be, about the potential impacts of stuff and prioritizing and just really thinking at a root level, like, why am I doing this? What would this hire that I'm going to make, what will it do for the business? Why is that important? What will it allow us to do? What will the cost be? How certain am I of this? I feel like it, honestly, in a lot of business, especially at our scale, I don't think there's a ton of uncertainty that like I'm actively planning for. I feel like a lot of the basics are like kind of straightforward. And it's in like, yeah, COVID can hit and shake us up. And like, yeah, I wasn't planning for that. And then it kind of drives home the importance of just having a bigger buffer and kind of cash reserves and just like insuring against the downside. But then I think it's just frankly, like for the rest of it, it's not as much about managing uncertainty. It's just about making better decisions. Does that make sense at all?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. For sure. And I think something that like I struggle with is like, we are all forging a new path, you know, like, and I think that's where it's really different than, you know, gambling on the election or gambling on sports or whatever, is like, there is a decision. It's, you know, is this team going to win or that team going to win, or, you know, whatever, the president, you know, is Biden or Trump going to win? But with our businesses, I mean, first of all, there's 100 decisions you make every day that are guiding the direction of the business, and all of them have the potential to be wrong. But also, I think that there is no kind of Nate Silver giving you the data, right? Of like, okay, this is the value of this decision you're making, and this is kind of the cost and the framework around it.
I guess this is kind of where I disagree a little bit, where it's like, I don't think we are making like covering new ground every day at our scale. I'm intentionally like not trying to reinvent the wheel. And I feel like there are a ton of people who have gone through this before that we can learn from and like do our best to go in that direction. I mean, there's so much minutia in all the decisions we make that like, no one has made the exact decisions that we're making now. And there's a lot of context that we need. To me, it's like, I try not to view all of that stuff as new. And I feel like on some level, you definitely do as well. Like, because you guys follow the entrepreneurial operating system, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's effectively finding like your Nate Silver for operations.
Yeah. I mean, for sure on the operations side, I guess I was thinking a little more on like product direction. And yeah, I mean, as you're saying that, a lot of the core, especially of what we do, is not new. And we know that this is the thing that our app needs to do. And you probably think the same thing. I guess I'm thinking more like the bigger strategic directions, like go after the enterprise or not. Yeah, hire this person to focus on this thing or not. Like that kind of stuff is a little less, like that path is less traveled. So I agree that like, and I am very grateful for people that have kind of put stuff out there, you know, folks like Rob Walling that have like put a bunch of content out there and shown us all how they're doing this so that we can just, you know, borrow, quote, a lot of the best practices of things they've learned. I think that overall is really good. I do worry sometimes that we're all running the same playbook and that could be bad at some point in the end. And I think especially around like marketing, that like things like content marketing just get oversaturated because everybody just does it. I do worry that like that I'm part of the herd in a negative way sometimes. I'm not so worried about it that I'm going to stop, but I do think about it.
I don't think that's wrong by any means. I think by definition, most people, most businesses are part of the herd. And I think that's where I kind of keep going back to just really deeply thinking about why we're doing the things that we're doing, because it just becomes too easy to feel as though you're following the best practices, but you're really just going through the motions and they're not generating results or nearly the results that they could. It's why you used to always just hear like SEO is dead, Facebook ads are dead, like these things are dead. It's like, no, they're not, but you can't just go in and implement like a 10-step checklist and expect to start printing money. Because it is more competitive. Everyone started following those checklists. And so now the table stakes are much higher. And if you just kind of dabble in these things, you're going to be part of the herd and you're not going to get kind of standout results. And so I think for me, where I've done well, and it's not at all to say that like I don't make mistakes here. I make an insane amount. But it's like, I try to think big picture of like, what direction are we going in? What are the things that are most important for the product, for the people? And so I guess to get like specific, I'll talk about some of our product decisions. And so originally I felt like we were getting a bit unfocused, where in our market, there's kind of a lot of different competitors that all do a variety of different things. There's pretty much like one competitor that's like most directly comparable to ours. The others are a mix of software and content picks. Like some will give you their projections. Some will have tools to act on those projections. Some will have podcasts and blog posts and all these other things, but they're all just like sort of all over the place. And early on, it just was clear to me, like, we can't do all of those things well. And so we're not going to have a podcast. We're not going to churn out content every single day or every single week, even. We just can't play that game. And it's super competitive. And so then it's saying, okay, so we take those kind of media companies out of our competitive realm. Then from there, it's saying, all right, what's left? Do we have the software component? And then we have kind of like the picks, the projections, and like the data that goes into the software. And early on, I think we were too diluted in trying to go after both of those things, but they really are separate markets. I think they're complementary, but it's a lot to do for a small team to work on data collection, work on your algorithms, work on all these things while improving the core product. So we kind of hit pause on a lot of the improvements to the algorithms and the models. We got them to a point where we were confident in them, but we couldn't just keep working on them and the product. And so that was kind of just very narrowing in on specifically what market am I trying to go after now? And then it made product decisions just way easier because I could, every week when we're going over our priorities, we could say, okay, what moves the actual like software forward and gets us competitive and helps us stand out from the crowd on a software level? But then we could go even deeper and say, okay, what are the different kind of segments of this market? And there are professional players. There are kind of like semi-pros that they're profitable in the long run, but they have a day job. They're doing this on the side. And then there's the casual players that many don't even have like an expectation of profit. They purely view this as entertainment, but they want to do better. And each of those markets want pretty different things. And if you're building like a feature for one segment at the same time as one for another, like it's, you just don't make progress in a way that's meaningful to any of them because they all feel like you're moving pretty slow and they still don't have what they want. And so we made a decision to go even narrower and say, okay, which segment are we closest to serving now? Which will get us furthest ahead, like in terms of separation from the competition? And what do they care about? And for us, it was the more casual players. We were getting a lot of traction with them. They're not served well by any of the other players, but we knew there's more we could do to serve them even better. And so we focused on that. And that, again, just made the product decisions way easier when we knew what part of the business are we focusing on and what segment of our customers are we trying to best serve. And now that like we're frankly almost done with like the list of things that need to get done for that segment, it's like, all right, which one do we go after next? And what do they care about? But so this is a long-winded way of kind of walking through like how I think about these things. But I feel like the more you can narrow down specifically what you're trying to do, and you do that by like figuring out who you're trying to serve, what they need, and all of that, just the easier a lot of decisions get. And even if like I prioritize something wrong, it's like as long as I'm directionally, like strategically going in the right direction, it's probably not that big of a mistake. Like it just means like, okay, we got this feature out like a month later than I wish we would have or whatever. But like the mistakes, I just feel like are much less expensive that way when you can kind of just like put your blinders on and just get strategically pointed in the right direction. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it definitely resonates. And I think the two things that I was thinking about when you were running through that was like, one is like really taking the time to think. It sounds silly, but like we are all so busy and just like running in circles a lot, I am at least, that I find like my most clarity comes from like walking the dog or just like a random time when I'm not on my phone, I'm not at the computer, I'm doing something else. And hopefully it doesn't take away from family time, but like, I think really being intentional about taking a step back and like, there's a reason these big companies talking about EOS have like offsite quarterly planning meetings is that you have to unplug and go somewhere else and think strategically for a day. And it's like, I don't know if we need that as, you know, smaller businesses, but I definitely think you need, as silly as it sounds, an hour a week to really just sit and think. And I don't do as good a job of this as I should, but every time that we kind of just have like a non-tactical meeting, but just like a brainstorming strategy meeting, it is amazing, you know? Like, and we are really clear on who we're trying to serve and why and how and what that means for them. That's one of the biggest missing pieces, I think, for a lot of people is not thinking, not taking the time or prioritizing that, because it's really clear, like this prioritization thing is the second part. It is really clear when you take the time to step back and say like, where do I sit in the market? Who is my audience or my target customer and what do they need? That's the stuff that's not that uncertain, like you're talking about, you know,
right?
Like that all should be really clear. If you know your market and stuff, you should know, okay, I sit here, I can go after this segment and serve this type of customer, and I need to do this. But I think that taking the time to think about it and then taking the time to, like you said, really drill down to very specific questions is really important. And when I do that, yeah, I don't have a lot of fear about the decisions I'm making when those two things have happened.
Yeah, no, I think you're right on. And like, it's I can take for granted that like this is, I'm naturally analytical. And like, I just hate not knowing what I'm doing. I overthink a ton of things. And so my default is to just think things through as much as I possibly can. And I probably go too far with it a lot of times. And it's so easy when things are crazy in a business to just go through the motions, and because you're getting pulled in 1,000 different directions, you don't have time to take that step back and think things through.
Do you like actually go somewhere? Do you have a routine or like some way to kind of unplug yourself so you have that space to think?
I don't want it to come across as though like I sat down and figured this out and then was like, all right, like this is our strategy, like let's go for it. It's like, what I'll typically do is I don't really have a process for it. I don't have a routine. I am almost always like, if I'm off the computer and not working, it's like I'll be listening to a podcast, I'll be listening to an audiobook, I'll be reading a book, whatever it is. And if that causes me just kind of be thinking about how these things can apply in my business and just thinking about business in general. And it's like, oftentimes what will happen is every couple of weeks, maybe something will kind of really resonate with me, or just something will click where it's kind of like put a few things together, or think about our positioning, or just think about whatever we're tackling in a different way. And I'll just kind of give myself permission and be like, all right, I'm going to spend the next few hours. I write. So like, I'll just write through all of this, trying to figure things out. And then I'll be like, all right, like this is like kind of the MVP of like this strategy. And then I'll come back and talk with the team and kind of be like, all right, like this is where I think we're going to be heading. But then I'll iterate on it again. Like next time I'm like, oh, okay. We learned a bit. We saw kind of how this went, and then take some more time to think and just kind of like keep iterating. Like I was saying, is like, it started by me just like kind of thinking about all the different ways that the other people in the space are operating and just breaking down what those businesses look like and then figuring out what we can do. And then just kind of going narrower and narrower as we get more information and just adjusting it. But it's for me, it's a constant process of like, I'm trying to think, where it's sort of like the waterfall process, where it's like less agile, where it's like every day, every week, I set aside this time and go through it and then adjust. It's more just like come up with something, spend a bunch of time planning it out, put it in motion, and then like, as I get more information, adjust, I'll do that again and adjust.
Coming in, right?
Exactly. Like yeah. That's kind of how it is. So yeah, and it probably would be helpful to be more deliberate about it, but
it sounds really practical. You know, it sounds kind of like our product process, you know, like we do these 6-week sprints and it sounds exactly like how we try to do that. We give a lot of thought to what do we need and why and for who. All of it changes like almost instantly, but like at some point we have thought through it and have been really intentional about it. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And that's where it's like going back to what I was saying before, where it's like, I do agree that, yeah, I don't think enough founders, enough business owners have like much of a kind of vision for things and not even like a 30,000 foot view of it, but like just like more practically speaking, like their strategy of like where they're trying to go right now, what they're trying to do. And just having that, like you were saying, makes decisions a lot easier, because like as long as you put in thought and you don't just have some ridiculous idea of like what you're trying to do, just narrowing it down just makes things a lot easier. So for me, yeah, it's like the uncertainty comes around from like the things I really can't control. And so it's just trying to like put my business in a place where it is default alive in most kind of world scenarios, and then just like not worrying about the uncertainty and just kind of keep trucking ahead and just again like making sure the downside risk isn't catastrophic, but then just like plugging ahead on the things that I do know.
Yeah. I think that the real like objective, non-emotional part of you is strong there in saying that like a lot of the decisions you make are reversible, right? That none of these are one-way streets that you're going down. If you make the wrong decision, it's just that you're going to build this feature first instead of that feature, or your marketing campaign is targeted at this group and not that group. And I think that's really healthy. I think it's just, for me, I feel like we make a lot of decisions. Some of them are big and some of them are small, but just the number of decisions is daunting. And I have really enjoyed chatting with you for this podcast. I feel like it's helped me clarify a lot of my thinking around these decisions. And working with AD, my mentor, has been really good there. He helps me think through a lot of these scenarios and question why we're doing things so that I have less fear about decisions I'm making.
For your side, it's like you have a bigger team, and just the more people that get involved, the more decisions you're making. And I just feel like it's much easier to get into, like, you're managing people, they need to kind of know what to do. So you're busy setting priorities for them. And I feel like it's harder and harder to take that step back and think more strategically. So do you, like, you talked about going on walks with your dog, and like that's time where things kind of naturally can percolate a bit for you. But like, have you done any of the like solo founder retreats or things like that to really just kind of force this thinking in?
Yeah. So I've not done one in a while, obviously, because we can't go anywhere.
True.
I've done like two that were about a day long, and it's a long time to be by yourself. Like, I haven't been, like, I have two kids, and like being by myself is like an hour or whatever a day, maybe. But yeah, I haven't done a lot of it. I feel really indulgent at the thought of like going away for a weekend by myself. Like, that's just asking a lot of my family and taking a lot for myself. But I also think that like I can get a lot of this done in like a day, you know? So I need, like, sometimes I will just say like, I'm going to take a day and not do a lot of quote real work, but just think and plan and, you know, write stuff out in Notion or whatever. I do try to be a little disciplined about having some more structured and dedicated planning or thinking time. Because the other thing that I found is like the team being bigger and me being less involved on a day-to-day basis in certain aspects of the business means I need to be much more clear and organized with this stuff than if I'm in the weeds, like actively affecting the direction and the decisions, because like I have to bundle up everything and hand it to someone, you know, like I'd say, this is what we're going to do and why and for who, and, you know, all of this stuff, I have to write it out or verbalize it instead of like me doing the work. So that's been like a transition a bit, is like, I hate to say the vision, but like a lot of that vision kind of stuff and values are starting to be things that I talk about and like guiding how the team works and why and stuff.
When did you, we don't need to kind of start a new topic here, but I'm just curious, when did you first really work on EOS in your company?
Oh man. I mean, it's been a really long journey of very, very, very small steps. Maybe 2 years ago I started.
This is, again, a topic for another discussion where I get to kind of put you in the hot seat, but it's like, I think I do a good job of thinking strategically, but I don't have to really disseminate that a ton amongst the team. Like, I definitely could do a better job of keeping everyone else in the loop. And as the team expands, that just becomes so much more important. So I'd love to, in another episode, just dig into how, once you come up with the vision, when you figure out the strategy of what you're working on now, how you make sure everyone else is on board and going in that direction. Because like right now, it's kind of easy when our team is so small, but I know it won't always be that way.
Yeah. And I mean, we're seven people. We're one or two people bigger than you. But I think we both are at that place where if we don't figure this stuff out now, when you're 10 or 12 people, your life's going to be, as like the leader, it's going to be hell, because, or your team's not going to be working effectively because they don't know what you want. So yeah, I definitely think figuring this stuff out now is important, even if it's a little premature. Interesting. Well, man, I will be going back to looking at the news here shortly to see what happens with the election. Best of luck to you with the wagers you put down, for sure. But yeah, really cool to talk to this stuff. I think that, like, especially these days, understanding and kind of managing the process of like uncertainty and risk is super important. So it's cool to hear kind of how you think about it and go kind of through that process. So thanks for sharing that stuff.
Yeah, and I hope it was helpful. I hope I didn't just kind of ramble for too long. But like I was telling you, Craig, before, this is something that a lot of it is kind of natural to me, because like when you are gambling for a living, like you have to think things through. You have to be hyper aware of the cost, the payout, just everything else involved in it. And so it's just something that like comes naturally to me. So I hope when I kind of talked about it that it was at least somewhat coherent. But if people have questions, feedback, whatever else, definitely happy to chat about this stuff with anybody. So please don't hesitate to reach out.
Awesome, man. Sounds good. Well, good to chat, and we'll catch up soon. Thanks, everybody.
Yeah, sounds good. Talk to you next week. See ya.